Okay, so I'm going to talk about service system thinking, and this is a late talk because a space opened up in the program. This is a talk that I gave in various forms, and this one, so I presented at PLOP, and I also presented at Asian PLOP. Let me get them on this here. So I'm going to talk about shifting from environmental structure into a new generation of pattern language. And I'm going to cut this down. I'm going to skip through slides. I'm going to go through three ideas. Firstly, what could service system thinking be? Because you don't know what service systems are. Secondly, I'm going to skip through the moving from architectural programming to a generative pattern language, because most of this is covered in the Battle book. And I'm going to talk a little bit about federated wikis and a value constellation ontology, which is a different way of looking at it and updating what we've got today. So I come from the system thinking community, and so when we're working across agricultural systems, industrial systems, and service systems. You kind of think of the history of the world. We come from agricultural systems originally, went to the Industrial Revolution, and now we're into a revolution in the service sector. And you ask, well, what's a service system? And the service systems in our world, this comes from work that eventually was done at IBM Research. And so the systems we're talking about are systems that move, store, harvest, and process. Sorry, I have to figure out how to take this thing off. Just hold on. Close this. Here we go. So we're talking about changing these types of systems. Systems that move, store, harvest, and process. So transportation systems, water and waste supply, food and global food supply, energy, information, and communication infrastructure. So the index down the right side is, if you were to change the industrial system of education to a service education, that's from going from kindergarten to grade 4. By the time they get to grade 5, you can work on systems that enable healthy, wealthy, and wise people. Building construction, you can take them to a building site, you can take them to a bank, you can take them to retail operation, you can take them to a hospital in grade 8, how does a hospital work? And then at grade 9, you get to education, which is pretty funny because they've been in school now for 8 years, they don't really know how school works. The systems that govern are the ones that are the trickiest, so we're talking about how would you use patterns to change the architecture of governments with cities, regions, and nation states. There's definitions. So in 2008, the Cambridge Institute for Manufacturing, IBM, did a definition, and I'll skip over that. But the basic idea is up here that a service system configuration, a dynamic configuration of resources, people, technology, organizations, and shared information. So this crosses over from the built environment over into social systems and also technologies. So it's a pretty big vision. I said that I come from the system thinking community, so if you've heard of the stuff with socio-technical systems, there was also at Tavistock at the same time socio-psychological systems and socio-ecological systems. Well, and the question is, we're going to move out of this system thinking world into a new world, then what is that going to be? And I haven't got an answer here, but as an example, the sort of thing you're talking about experientially, if you enjoy a service. So when you go to a hospital, are you actually enjoying the hospital? That may be a strange sort of way of describing going to a hospital. But if you're talking about the wholeness, the unfolding wholeness that you get, that's the sort of thing you have to be looking at. And that doesn't denigrate that you have the engagement part coming in when you first engage the service system, how you get to the hospital, and the development, which is how those services actually got to be there. Okay, so the second part, I talk about architectural programming to a generative pattern language. I went through in the plot paper about the background about why we talk about pattern language in the first place, which comes from architectural programming. And what we do is we separate out problem seeking from problem solving. Problem seeking is architecting, problem solving is design. And so some people don't make the distinction between architecture and design, but I'm making the strong distinction based off this work that was being done in the 1960s. From there, let's go through all the pattern stuff, and we go through the Aishin campus. And this is where I've taken the battle book, and I'm looking at it in a different way. This is straight out of the book, and people do not focus on this. These are the methods. So in essence, people have not been talking about the Oregon experiment. People talk about pattern language, and they talk about timeless way, but I'm interested in services, which requires that people perform things. So these are the eight activities that came out of the, that are written in the Aishin book. One, interview on hopes and dreams. Two, make a poetic vision of the first sketch of a pattern language. And I'm going to go through a few of them because there are a few that are important. So number three, make a rudimentary pattern language. So you have to make it physically coherent. So what I find is when there's a lot of focus in pattern building and pattern generating in this world, but as you've been trying to do, implementing the patterns and making the patterns real is a part that's missing. But this, my experience at IBM was that IBM Global Services method was actually a pattern language approach. And so that included actually putting together project teams and going out to the field. And so most people have done step one and step two, but they don't get to step three, which is, okay, you have to actually make the stuff fit physically on the site. You get to five, approve pattern language, because you haven't actually got anything done at that point. And then now in six, renegotiate the pattern language, space, and money within the budget. So most people never get to that point where they actually implement, and it's like, okay, no, we have to make this real. Now here's the part where the people miss and where the systems thinking comes in. Find the system of centers, one, in the pattern language, which is in the idea. So you're just talking about the A and not A. This is the first part. It's the not A because it's abstract. The second thing you're looking for is the places in the land. The places in the land are real. So what you are doing and what happened is that when they did the initial drawings that I showed, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that they did them and then you have the patterns of the that are in the buildings that you're trying to build and you have the land and in fact you're going like this. And what happens in the book is he describes they moved the entrance because it wasn't working, right? So they turned it. At that point, you got the alignment. So this is on an actual implementation. So this would be a project language, as you had spoken about earlier. You've got the pattern language, but it's not good enough. You're going to have to go down to the project language and say, look, you're on the site. I understand the pattern language, but this is what we're building. They combine them. Adjust the site plan on the model itself. So So when I'm talking about pattern language and architectural programming,
6 minutes.
Yes. I think we should think off between, there's trade-offs between scale, scope, speed, and acceleration. So you get economies of scale, you can get economies of speed, you can get economies of scope, you get economies for acceleration. But when you optimize, you only optimize two out of three dimensions. So you can have something fast and big, but then it's going to be slow. Or you can have something small, and customized, and you can have very quickly. So there's different ways of doing this. This is not designing. This is just setting up the architecture because you're trying to set things on the land and scale things to a certain size. Through wholeness. One of the things that comes out of the services literature that I don't see in Alexander, I think it should come in, is the idea of value. And this comes from the marketing literature. And what this is actually recently published by Irene Ng out of the University of Warwick. And what happens is that you have an access consciousness, which is based off ex ante. So the example they talk about is food. So you're going to eat something. Okay, so there's a value before you're eating because you're hungry. There's a value after you've eaten, right? There's value while you're consuming as well. So in a service, there's anticipation of the service. So anyone that has a mobile phone, before you got your mobile phone, there was anticipation about the service, and you could have been satisfied then, and then you get the phone, and you have to try to use it, which is a different thing. So the types of value are different. If you can think about this in terms of building, the same sort of thing happens when people are say, I'm going to buy this property, I'm going to put a piece of land on it, it's going to be wonderful, and then they get there, and it's like, oh, I don't have enough money. So then you have to experience it in the real sense. And so in the services literature, this is the newest research that's coming out, and we can reapply that into the pattern language if we want to. Last idea is Wiki. Wiki was originally invented by Ward Cunningham to support pattern language cooperation. So this is from the original C2 Wiki, when they first started Wiki and they first started design patterns work. But what's happened is that you have the Wikipedia problem, which is on the left side. There can only be one page ever. In the federated wiki on the left, on the right side, the idea is that there can be multiple wikis simultaneously where people come in, and in effect, this is, if you're familiar with GitHub, this is the way that GitHub works. So people can simultaneously have multiple versions of reality, and then you merge them together. Mm-hmm. And this is the way we should be developing patterns in from now on, and I've been encouraging this, because Ward Cunningham, when he was there and he invented the wiki for pattern language, and he's saying it's not what he thought it was going to be. Wiki is not doing what he wanted, and he created this new federated wiki. So these are federated wiki pages, and what they look like. And what I've done is I've taken the 1968 a pattern language that generates multi-service centers. It's a Christopher Alexander book, one of the earliest books, and I've actually implemented that on the wiki, on the federated wiki. So here's the pattern. If any multi-service center, then the building should contain a major area of established community territory. And you can go through all these. The summary is 64 patterns, small target areas, location, size based on population, community, territory. These are all in the patterns book. I had to go to the Berkeley Library to get it. When you actually sketch them out, they look like this. Now, this is something that was on the cover of the 1968 book, and it's missing from the pattern language book because they don't visualize all the patterns and how they're connected. And so when we're building pattern languages, I think that we should actually be taking this sort of approach to make it easier for people to consume, because you can see which patterns connect together and how they might be implemented. So here's an example. Hunts Point, 40,000 people, strong community, large block workers, and it involves these patterns together. And there's the description. And then I'll skip down from Hunts Point to San Francisco. And so you think about this, this is actually now getting onto sites, right? You have the idea of the whole pattern language was available to you, but you're not going to use every pattern. You're going to use the ones that are important for the site you're at. And so it's a different pattern language. There's some other stuff coming out in server science research, and the idea is to combine the idea of intent, and this is ISTAR. And so you can take the ideas and create value propositions and resources that are more concrete. And the other idea is out of object process methodology. If you're gonna draw box charts, their simple rule is draw the objects as rectangles, draw the processes as ovals, and we'll be looking to see whether we can combine those sorts of concepts. Because when you're looking at the whole pattern language, it's too many patterns. Some of them are objects, some of them are processes, and how do we actually make that a little bit straightforward? So, I've been presenting this work. This is the beginning of the work. I presented it first at the systems engineering community. I presented the service community. I presented the system science community. I was at PLOP. I was at Relating System Thinking and Design, which is a design thinking conference. Now it's PurpleSoc. So I'm trying to get people from all across these communities, and it's not going to be everyone's interested in it. But these are the sort of domains that I'm focused on trying to do. And what we're looking for is to try to create, move from the idea of a pattern catalog to generate a pattern language. And most people are only going as far as creating the pattern catalog, but they're not actually creating something that's generative. So I'll take questions, and we can discuss it. I can go back to some of the things.
Thank you. Really good.
You understand a little better this time. We were having a conversation, Asian flop, and there's like no slides. It's a little more difficult. This is a little better.
Yeah.
So I think our work is coming together, because I like the idea of project language, which is very much clearer.
Implementations.
Yeah. And the idea of wholeness. Yes.
So I want to kind of bring up two experiences that I've had where I see that things don't get implemented and don't get researched. One is, as an architect, student of architecture, they encourage us to use programs that make sustainability models.
Yep.
And so I feel oftentimes that it's far too rough and it's not in an actual built environment and there's no feedback being placed on those numbers. So students are basically plugging in things that they think are going to be their thing, and then they say, look, this is how energy efficient my building is. And those actually get implemented in the buildings, and more recently they're having post-occupancy evaluation. So you apply that, but then you actually have to study the application and allow that application to comment on the original program.
Okay.
And then the second thing, I did my studio thesis in West Oakland, and it's an area in the middle of an old industrial park that serves San Francisco. It's like San Francisco's little brother.
Yep.
And so the all the people that live there, they say in the summer months, have an increase in lead in their lungs of the 30% because of the activating of the industrial processes in those months. And so what they did was they actually, when the earthquake happened, it fell down, the bridge connection fell down, they replaced it with a greenway. They planted like 120 plants of species, 64 different oak trees, and they're saying, oh, it's going to clean everything. But they didn't really comment, and they didn't study how it cleans the air. And so there's an organization called Adapt Oakland that uses adaptive processes to make incremental change based off of the observation patterns, I guess, in a sense, and then study the influence and impact and put that back into the system that's growing. And I just think kind of what you said is really important. It's how do you apply those things, how do you create a generative process, and then how do you continue to stay involved with those things? And it's just really fascinating.
One of the big things is that we need to frame the projects correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the service system science people have been coming in really well. So if you say, as an example, this is a water project,
okay.
So it's a water system, or you could say it's an electrical system, it puts some better bounds on the scope of what you're working on without having to come down and say, it's this building,
right.
Or it's this park, or it's this sort of thing. Because you're not thinking about the instance or single slice of time when the building is actually completed. You're thinking about the service that would be provided over a long period of time. So if you're talking about a water system, then it's like, okay, it's going to be a water system that's for the next 50 years. So are you actually going to have the same quality of water coming out through that system? And then you've got floods and, you know, river plains and all that stuff coming in. So,
it's an ecosystem that's growing and it's impacted by everything that changes.
Yes.
And furthermore, if you keep the person who built it involved, if you can force them to stay involved, they will do a better project.
Yeah.
And they will
yeah.
make sure that in 50 years it's doing what they said it was originally.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
What are your next steps? How do you continue to do this work? Or,
Keep in touch. So I'll come to Pearl next year.
Okay.
I wasn't supposed to come to this conference. I'm actually going to a conference in the UK. I have to finish my dissertation this year.
Oh, really?
So I got the manuscript by fall, and then you know that sort of stuff. So that's been the thing that's pulling me back, but. I've been trickling this stuff out because to get across all these different communities, like you really need some of the systems thinking, system science people, and then you need some of the services people, and then we need people that have experience in patterns for a long period of time. So it's crossing different things. It's a lot different from the other purple sock type approaches because when I say, okay, if you want to take city government as a system, you know, it's like, well, you don't see those type of large-scale things. And one of the things I picked up, actually, in Hayo's talk, he was talking about the chapter that got left out of Battle, which was chapter 24 on scaling. And this stuff is all about scaling. It starts off at scale. As an example, we had to talk about cooking. It's like, no, let's not talk about cooking. Let's talk about a cooking system. Which means you now have to, where are you going to get the fuel? Where's the stove come from? Where are you going to get the people that actually cook?
Who grows it? Where is it coming from?
Yes, exactly. So it's delimiting, but taking a service system framing just changes the whole way that you think of these things.
I love system thinking.
Mm-hmm. No, I retired from IBM. I was 28 years at IBM. I'm younger. So
I was wondering what is your current things that you're doing now? Because
I'm finishing a PhD on something else.
Oh.
But I've been a president of the system science organization. So I'm carrying out the message. So I'm doing missionary work now. That's what I'm trying to do. So we can talk about system thinking offline. Because there are multiple ways of systems thinking, and the reason I've been in Tokyo every year for the past 8 years is because I've been the Tokyo Institute of Technology for Service System Science.
Mm-hmm.
Last time, Motohashi, I met Motohashi last time. He's in Deguchi's lab. Deguchi's the guy that's bringing me to come to Japan.
Really?
Yes. So there's a very small circle of people that know kind of what we're working on. So I'm hoping to get a little more concrete. The thing I like about the pattern language is it's much more concrete than the stuff that we're working on in services, because it's very generally abstract. You're talking with stuff like, you know, water systems and, you know, and government and stuff like that. You're going, oh, you know, I don't know how to do those sorts of things. So when you get down to it, well, you're talking about pattern of organizing civic involvement. It's kind of like, oh, okay, you know, I've been to that sort of meeting. So, yeah, we'll talk about system thinking separately.
Another comment on system thinking. I have trouble. It doesn't find its way into the real world very often because it kind of is so complicated. It touches so many things, and sometimes it spits out answers that are counterintuitive to the way we think. And I kind of agree with you. Pattern language is maybe a way to start implementing system thinking, or I don't know, like, how do you see system thinking actually getting integrated into, like, everyday problem solutions?
Okay, so on my blog, I'll give you the address for my blog later. I wrote a very long article on Christopher Alexander as a systems thinker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it goes all the way back to A City Is Not a Tree. Mm-hmm. And Semi-Lattice, and all that sort of stuff. And so in doing that investigation, there's a 2014 dissertation by Mary Steenson, and she did most of the heavy lifting on that, but I did a blog on that, so I can show you where that is. Yeah, because I think the problem with people not understanding Christopher Alexander is they don't understand systems. That's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah.
And this is also a local Japanese company. When I tried system thinking, I thought that if you investigate the organization based on system thinking, you get a huge kind of system model. And I thought that if you go from outside of that system and kind of try to choose or make consistent level from outside, it's kind of annoying thing like that. My impression was that it's really, really kind of hard to deal with.
No, and so when I came to Japan last time, and Hiro and I were talking, we were discussing all the origins, because the person that was in the system think community was Wes Churchman, who was at Berkeley at the same time that Alexander was there, and then you also had Horst Riddle, who did the wicked problem stuff. And so the three of them, when you understand the three of them, then you kind of understand how things mesh together. But we've just been talking about it, because you have to back off and understand what was happening at that time. All the ideas are all meshed together, but people have taken it and they've gotten really narrow. So the problem, Horst Rittel people have come down and they're doing what are called argumentation schemes. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really narrow. But that makes the wicked problem worse, not better. So if you took the pattern language and you used it against the wicked problem, you'd probably be better off than doing it these other ways. So there's some background. Yeah.
So the argumentation scheme.
Yeah.
Presented earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.